When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
I started to look into football and I realized the football industry is really interesting for a lot of reasons. The most interesting reason is because it's the world's largest sport. 3 billion football fans in the world, bigger than any religion in the world. Okay, that's interesting. The second interesting part was that there were no global leader in football. At that time, the biggest football site had like 1.5 million users per day out of 3 billion football fans. So very fragmented, and most football products looked more or less the same and was quite boring. So I said, okay, let's try to build a football product.
Welcome to Coffee and Football. I'm Sebastian Alvarado, and I'm the host of this podcast where I sit with some of the most interesting and influential profiles in the game to learn about their lives and career journeys. This podcast is presented by 11 New York, a football brand and concept of premium apparel and original content for those of you with a refined taste. And full disclosure, I am a partner in the company. Please check it out at 11newyork.com. In this episode, my guest is Patrick Arnesson, the co-founder and CEO of Forza Football, the Swedish tech company behind some of the world's biggest football apps. Here, Patrick takes us through his journey from a disgruntled 21-year-old startup CEO servicing traditionally minded brands to creating one of the most innovative and sought-after football tech companies in the world. We touch on things such as taking the decision-making power from FIFA and giving it to the fans, what app developers and companies can learn from a 93-year-old sushi master, why company boards don't make sense, and closing the doors on venture capital firms, all that and much more. This was a fascinating conversation, so without further ado, here is Patrick Arnesson. Patrick Arnesson, welcome to Coffee and Football.
Thank you very much.
How are you doing today?
Very, very good. I'm a bit jet-lagged. I just came home from Tokyo, so I've slept 1.5 hour the two last days, but tonight I slept like 7 hours, so now I'm back on track.
That's what? How many hours time difference?
I haven't checked, actually. I think it's 6 or 7, I think.
Yeah, that's right. I went to Japan a couple of years ago. I think it was 13 hours from New York.
Yeah.
That's about right.
It's amazing.
What brought you to Japan?
So I was there for the first time 1.5 year ago, and I really fell in love with Japan as a country. I think it's the most amazing experience you can experience when you visit a new country, because it's so different to all other countries. I would say it's even more different than Cuba is. So that is what I like going in. Every single experience is a new kind of experience. Going into something like a 7-Eleven is a new experience in Tokyo, because the people are different, the products are different. So that is what I like the most, but also the fact that they have a lot of proud of the work they do. No matter what they work with, if they work in a toll gate, they are really proud of their work and they're trying to do it as good as possible. In most other countries, people just do their work and they don't like it, and you can see it, you can feel it, and that will affect how you feel as well. But in Japan, they are always very proud and always try to optimize the work they do and do it better every day. And I really, really appreciate that.
So other than that, what were some things that really struck you as very different from, and when you say different, are you comparing to Sweden specifically, or is it more about comparing to the Western world?
Yeah, comparing to the Western world or the rest of the world, because I think the Western world looks more or less the same. Like you have almost the same products in the US as in Sweden. But if you go to Japan to a 7-Eleven, I spent like 1 hour taking photos of strange products in a 7-Eleven in Tokyo, because there's so many cool things there. And just simple things, like if you go to a petrol station, like in the Western world, they have the card machine and like these big things where you fuel your car is on the ground. But in Tokyo, they are in the roof instead, which I think is so much smarter because you optimize the efficiency of the of the area. And so I think they've tried to optimize. Same with like subway. If you go into the subway, you can lick the floor because it's so clean, and I love it. And if you go to the subway in Stockholm, it's like disgusting. And everything just works, even like communication, train, everything, and it's just great products. And I really love great products. And there's too many really bad. Same with going into a restaurant. Like in Sweden or US or wherever, you really need to research, because the likelihood of you going into a restaurant which serves really bad food, it's very, very likely that it will happen. But in Japan, it will never happen. You can go into any place and since they're so proud of the work they do, they will give you a great experience.
Are there any specific learnings, would you say, that you could take from there and apply to your work life and the way you operate your company?
Yeah, definitely. So we build a product. So their way of thinking about product is of course something we can get from there. So my biggest inspiration is a sushi chef called Jiro Ono. So he has a sushi restaurant in the subway of Tokyo, and he has worked with the sushi for the last 70 years. He's 90 years today, and he is the first sushi restaurant in the world to get 3 stars in Guide Michelin, which basically means it's worth traveling to that country, eating that food. And that's cool. But then if you think about it, okay, so what's sushi? So it's raw fish, it's wasabi, soy, and rice. 4 ingredients. The only ingredients that is cooked is actually the rice. And they have perfected those 4 ingredients that much, so it's worth making a trip. And that is very, very remarkable. And it also says that you can always improve. So he says, like, every day I go to work, I need to improve the experience. Otherwise, people will not come back. And that is very, very true. But to live after that mantra is very, very hard. But he has done it for the last 70 years. And that is what I'm trying to bring to what we do. So we do a football app. We basically have 50,000 ingredients. We can, as I call it, yearify our ingredients for probably 2,000 years, because we have so many ingredients. So it's not about adding stuff. It's about making them better, the existing features. And I think that is the product developer's dilemma, that you add stuff because it's more fun adding stuff. And if you look at Jiro, he's very, very confident in what he knows and doesn't know. So he says, I don't serve drinks because I don't know drinks. I serve water. I don't serve desserts because I don't know dessert. And I really, really like that way of thinking. So find your core and enhance the core. And most companies are very, very bad at enhancing the core. As you say, especially app developers or digital products as a whole is very bad at enhancing the core, because people just add more stuff and make the core more complicated to use. And I would say the best company in the world to enhance the core is Google, the search engine. They are last 20 years, they have focused on the speed of the results and what results they're viewing. They haven't added a single button to the page. They're just trying to improve the core every day, and more companies should do that. Most services just get more and more complicated.
Why do you think that is?
Because it's more fun adding new stuff. If you're a product developer, like, what do you want to do? You want to add stuff. You want to make new stuff. So I just think it's how humanity works, that you want to do new stuff. And improving stuff is not as fun. But I think you need to remind yourself and remind your team that don't forget about the core. Because in the end of the day, that is why people use your product. Our product for some football, they use to check scores. Okay, so what's our core? It's live scores. Okay, so what does it mean? We need to improve the speed we send the results and how fast you can view the results. Nothing else. And the number of leagues we cover. nothing else is important. We don't do news, we do scores. That's our core.
And we are obviously going to dig much deeper into all these topics. Oh, and just as a side note, for those who are not familiar with Jiro, who has the restaurant in Tokyo, there is a phenomenal documentary called Jiro Dreams of Sushi that everybody should watch. And that is definitely somebody to follow. There's a phenomenal segment there because he worked with his son, who's like 60 plus years old. Yeah. And they're talking about the rice and the importance of the rice in sushi. And his son, who's like 60 plus, he still hasn't been allowed to really touch the rice because Jiro doesn't see that he's quite ready for it just yet.
He can actually do the rice, so he actually. But it's there is also one guy trying to do the egg omelette for every day in 3 months, and he doesn't manage to make it perfect. And at the time he have been with Jiro so the apprentice period is 10 years, and after 3 months he finally managed to do the egg omelette correctly according to Jiro, and he cries when you get the approval on the egg omelette. And that is something you believe should be pretty simple and that you should be able to do after 10 years as an apprentice, but obviously not. So very, very high standards for the product. But yeah, everyone should watch it. I think I've watched the documentary maybe 100 times or something like that.
We got off to a little start here, but when I walked in, typically I actually do these interviews in New York. Today we are in your hometown, which also happens to be my hometown in Gothenburg. Can you please describe the setting and where we're sitting here today?
Yes, our office is located in the city center of Gothenburg, and I believe offices are really, really important. So basically if you work 8 to 5, which is normal work hours, you spend 70% of your life in your office, and you tend to spend a lot of money and time on where you live, where you only spend 30% of your time. But offices generally, like, they should be boring and not creative, just, you know, something where you go. But I would say, since you spend 70% of your time here, you should spend 70% of your money, your effort to make that a really, really awesome experience. So we spent a lot of time to make this office great. So the goal was to create the world's best office. So one important part of this office is sound levels. So we have 3 different floors, where each floor is 1 level of sound. So the first floor is where we have the football pitch, the shuffleboard, the ping pong table, and the kitchen. All the things that generate noise is on the same floor, and where you can be loud and stuff like that. And then you have the second floor, which is the work area, where we can close the doors and where it's quiet, and where everyone should be quiet as well, where we have a lot of trees and plants and stuff like that to get you more relaxed. And then the third floor is the relaxed area. So we have a library where you can sit down and read a book, and we have, of course, the Japanese sand room as well, where you can lie down and rest and watch a photo of Jiro and get inspired.
Yeah, and it is a remarkable space. The description doesn't quite make it justice.
I will try to improve my sales pitch for the office.
It is fantastic. Actually, my first question typically is, I forgot it here, is since the theme is coffee and football, obviously I have to ask the question, how do you drink your coffee?
I always drink a double macchiato. So I have 3 coffee places here in Gothenburg. In all the cities I visit, I have my favorite coffee place. So in Gothenburg, there is actually really, really good coffee. So I have 3 different coffee places where I drink my coffee, always a double macchiato. And I just realized now that it's 9 a.m. in the morning, and I've had 1 coffee at each of the place. This morning I had a meeting at 8 a.m. and a coffee before that, and then a coffee during that meeting, and then a coffee with you right before we started here. So double macchiato at one of my favorite coffee bars here in Gothenburg.
So now that we got into the office, what does a typical day look like for you? So from the moment you wake up, what kinds of routines do you have? And then from there on?
I'm a very, very bad morning person. So I'm always very, very tired when I wake up. And I'm very, very quick at morning. So After the alarm goes off, I actually have 10 minutes, and then I'm out of the door. never eat breakfast at home, but I walk to the office and take coffee on my way to the office. And then we have breakfast every morning, great breakfast here at the office, which I usually eat together with my colleagues. And most of the times I'm in Gothenburg, but I travel quite often as well. But the routine is more or less the same. I just eat breakfast at a different place and drink coffee at a different place. But they always start with a double macchiato before breakfast.
And from there, once you get into the office, what does that day look like?
It's a lot of emails. I think that is the most depressing part of my work is emails. Spend a lot of my time reading and replying to emails, and also a lot of meetings, which I think is the fun part of my job, meeting people, both team members and trying to inspire them and stuff like that, but also meeting customers and partners, and also a lot of traveling, because most of our partners are not in Sweden, especially not in Gothenburg. So I travel a lot to the UK and to Holland is pretty common as well. Amsterdam, Nike has their head office there. And yeah, I would say Amsterdam and London is pretty common. And also Italy as well, since Italy is the country where we have our biggest user base.
What types of partners are those typically?
So it could be rights holders, so it could be like the Sky Sports and the BT Sport and stuff like that, but it could also be advertisers in the app like Nike, Adidas, Heineken, EA Sports. So since we are really proud of our product, we try to work with really relevant advertisers and make a really, really good integration into the app. So we spend a lot of time on meeting the partners, trying to understand their needs and building really creative campaigns together with them in the app. I think like one of the cool things we do is that every time a Nike or Adidas player scores a goal, we will display in a notification message what boot they were wearing when they scored that goal, and we will actually have an image of that boot in the app, and then you can click on it to buy it as well. That is relevant, great advertising, and that is the kind of things we try to do. We also work with betting companies, so meeting them a lot as well.
Do you ever experience any backlash from current users as you integrate ads into the applications, or has it been fairly...
Compared to our competitors, we've always have the by far the best ads, and because we have spent so much time on getting relevant advertisers in. So until recently, we haven't had ad networks at all. We have just contacted our advertisers directly, but since we've grown a lot, like, we realized it wasn't scalable. So like in the US... which is a quite big market for us, our revenue for the last 5 years is $0. And that isn't scalable in the long term. So we didn't manage to get advertisers on all the markets. So we have started getting in some ad networks, but tried to make it very, very good. And when we did that, some user complained, but we also communicated in a very, very clear fashion, like saying like, okay, we will try this because... our CFO told us that it will not be sustainable to not earn any money on this market where we have 250,000 users, and we need to try this. But our goal is to only have relevant ads. That is what we want to achieve. I think many, many products are destroyed with really, really bad ads. And also the way like the app industry have worked recently is like, look at these really, really bad ads and pay to get rid of them. I don't think that is a good way to do it. Because you're basically blackmailing your own users with really, really bad ads. It's not good for the user, it's not good for the product because you're blackmailing them, and it's not good for the advertiser because you're using the advertiser as a blackmailing tool. So we never want to end up in that situation, like big interstitials taking over the whole screen and you need to wait like 20 seconds before you use the product. So relevant ads is very, very important for us. We have a team of 10 people only working with selling and implementing really, really cool ads.
Do you have anything that you do to constantly keep evolving yourself?
Yeah, I started something pretty recently, which is probably one of the best things I've done, is that I sent out an anonymous feedback form to all my employees, where I asked them three questions. So the first question is, how awesome do you consider Patrick to be? And then you rate from zero to 10. And then the second question is a free field text where we ask, what things do you think Patrick do great today and should continue doing? And what things do you think Patrick needs to improve and or stop doing? And they answer whatever they think there. And the last question is, have Patrick improved since the last time you did this poll? And that has been, it has been by far the most valuable tool I have used to improve myself. Because even though we have a very, very open environment here and I want everyone to be able to say what they think, especially about me, it's quite hard. But that tool makes it very, very easy to be open with what I need to improve. And things that I've got from that tool is things that I even didn't know by myself, even though I worked with these people. And it's quite easy for me to improve. But I didn't know about it. And if I don't know about it, it's very, very hard to improve. I would say that is the most valuable tool. And then I also listen to some audiobooks, autobiographies of people that inspires me. There's a good book called Let People Go Surfing about Patagonia, the brand. Also listen to the book Shoe Dog with Phil Knight of Nike. That was really good as well. Also some podcasts as well. There's a really good podcast called Master of Scale with Reid Hoffman that I can highly recommend to everyone.
So according to your employees, what does Patrick Arneson do really well?
According to my employees, I would say the most common thing is to show passion for the product and spread energy between the employees. Yeah, that is basically... People like my energy and passion for the company, and that makes them more motivated, basically.
And what do you need to improve on?
It's twofold then. So some people think that I should relax more.
What does that mean?
So my biggest range is also my biggest weakness. One comment was like, Patrick, you have lots of energy at the office, and sometimes you just need to relax a bit. And also it could be that I'm talking very fast and thinking very fast. So when I talk to people and ask them to do things that I think are important, I don't describe the task that well. I just assume that they will understand everything and ask questions if it isn't unclear. And that is not happening every time. So that is also a very, very common mistake from me. So I would say it's an idea, but also being clear in the task I give. That is something I really, really need to... I really need to improve and work on.
Do you have any mentors?
No.
Is there a reason for that?
No, there's no reason. I would say like Jiro is my mentor, even though I've never met him. I just watch his documentary all the time. I think it's very hard to give advice. I think it's very easy to end up in a situation where you think that you're so brilliant and you can give advice to everyone. But I don't think it works like that. I think like... asking the people you work with how you can improve, that is great. But asking someone else that you don't work with what you can improve is quite hard because they don't spend the time with you. Like if you meet them one time every second month, how are they supposed to improve you? It's impossible. Same thing with like, that is why I hate boards, like company boards. Like the idea of that the board will have like great ideas on how to improve a company, it doesn't make sense. If they meet once every second month, like what should they know about the company? How can they know more about the company than me or the people that work in the company? It's basically impossible. I think you should ask for feedback for the people that you spend the most amount of time with. And your team members are important than family and friends. A board will never come up with good decisions because they're meeting 2 hours every second month. They don't know your product. They don't know your challenges. So that is one thing we're trying to include here. Like, so most companies are run like a pyramid. So you have the shareholders. They have a lot of decision power since they elect the board. Then you have the board that is supposed to set up the strategy and stuff like that, long-term strategy. And then they give it to the CEO, and then the CEO give it to the manager, middle manager, and then it comes down to the bottom of the pyramid, which is the people who do the work, and they have the least to say. But they have the best knowledge in the product, in the company. So I'm trying to invert that pyramid in our company, where we move the decision power to the people who work in the company, not to the board, because I just think it makes sense. If you work here, you spend most of your waking time thinking about this, and then you will come up with a much, much better decision than during a two-hour board meeting every second month, because the board members are not superhumans. They must have been superhuman if you believe that they will come up with better decisions. I just don't think it makes sense how most companies are being run, and I'm trying to change that.
I'm sure I'll get back to this as I get to know you in this conversation, but I find it very interesting in that sense. Compared to most others out there, you're still a fairly young CEO of a considerable company in that sense. You seem to have your ideas fairly clear. You want to change things and implement it and do them differently here. Where do you think that comes from?
So I basically think it comes from when I started working, when I was like directly after high school. So I haven't gone to university until I started working directly after high school. And I started working at a really, really big company, internet service provider. There is a huge company in Sweden called Telia. And I started working there and I realized like there is so many things that is broken at this company. Like the majority of the things in this company is broken. But when I tried to fix those broken things, like the managers told me, don't even spend time on it. It's not worth it. Also on that day, I decided I was 19. I will never work for a big corporation in my life. Okay, then going to university isn't important at all for me. And then I worked for another internet service provider that was smaller, like 40 employees, and they had been around for 12 years. But I realized there was a lot of broken stuff there as well. So and people weren't satisfied and they did a lot of things in the wrong way. And there was a lot of politics and middle managers and stuff like that. So I decided, okay, the only way to do it is to start from your own and learn from the mistakes you have seen at other companies. And then I joined a startup, and we did a lot of mistakes at that startup for 7 years. And then I took that learnings to this startup and tried to improve it. So I think I've seen a lot of bad companies, and I really want to change it. And I also have realized that money isn't important at all for your well-being. And I realized that really early, because when I was young, I started making a lot of money at a very, very young age. And I realized it doesn't affect my well-being at all. And I'm very lucky that I realized that when I was young, because most people realize that when they are like 50 years old, and then they have fighted all their life to get more money. And then they realize, oh shit, it wasn't important. Then they have wasted 50 years of their life. And that sucks. So I just want to optimize for happiness. And what makes you happy? It makes you happy to work with the people who love the work they do. Okay, how do you make them love the work they do? You make them feel involved, that they are being part of the decision. So in the end of the day, it's just egoistic. I just want to be happy. And how do I optimize for happiness in my company, since I spend so much time here? How do I make my teammates happy? Because if they are happy, I will be happy. And I'm not scared of making mistakes. That is another thing. Like, in order to improve, you need to fail a lot of times. And I'm not scared of that. I'm confident in doing mistakes and talking about mistakes with everyone.
Hey, just a quick update. Coffin Football is now presented by 11 New York, a football brand of high-quality apparel that includes cotton tees, French terry bottoms, and my favorite, socks made out of merino wool. All products are made in Los Angeles and in North Carolina. Please visit 11newyork.com to view it all. And it's a special for Coffin Football listeners. For a 15% off your next purchase, use discount code CF11. That is CF and the number 11. Thanks, guys.
Before we dig even further into the company, I'm curious to learn a little bit more about your background, because I'm sure there's some influences there that have shaped you to who you are today. But let's start from the beginning. Where'd you grow up?
So I was born in Gothenburg, and when I was two, I moved to Östersund, which is in the middle of Sweden, small town with like population of 60,000 or something like that.
That nobody knew of until this past year or two.
Exactly. So I really regret that. So when I lived there, they were playing like the football team was playing like in Division 5 or something like that. So no one rooted for that team. So what you did back then is that you just picked a team of your own, like, okay, I picked this team in the south of Sweden because they are playing in the highest division. So no one rooted for that team, and I really regret that, because it would be really cool to be part of that journey they have made from division 5-6 to the top division and playing the playoffs in the Europa League, that small city. And they also want to do things different than most other football teams in the world. And so I think they have a lot of common. So I really respect them. I think it's really, really cool. And I also love the fact that they're always talking about the team. I think that the most negative trend I see in football is that it's getting more and more individual based. That you believe that, oh, there was a manager in this team who did great. Let's move him to this team. Then he will be great. But the world doesn't work like that. That manager was managing the team in one city with a set of players that he worked really good with. That doesn't mean that he will work good with 20 other players in another city. Like, same with players. I get this player, he's good in that team. Okay, then he will be good in our team. Sometimes, like, football teams doesn't seem to understand team dynamics, which is very, very, very strange, because they are called football teams, not football individuals.
Yeah, absolutely. How would you describe your upbringing?
I was raised in a middle class family, and I would say one thing that really, really affected me was that my father worked as a policeman before, and he really loved it. It was the best occupation he ever had. But as most other people, he stopped doing that because he was going to work in my father's bread company, where he will obviously earn more money than as a policeman. But he gave up the best job he have ever had to work with something that was less interesting but made him more money. And I think I saw that, and then I realized, okay, doing what you love when you work is very, very important. And you shouldn't optimize for money. You should optimize for happiness. So I think that affected me a lot. And then I also, when I moved from Östersund back to Gothenburg when I was 12, also affected me, because it's hard to move. You really need to find new friends, which means you need to increase your social skills and stuff like that. So that affected me as well in a good thing. I think it's good for kids to move, because it will challenge them. You will be too confident if you just live in the same place all the time.
And now Gothenburg is obviously your hometown. You talk a lot about Gothenburg in relation to your company and when you put things into perspective. And I want to get into now and, you know, where and how it all started. But before that, why did you start this company?
So basically, I was running this startup before. We were basically a consultancy company working with search engine optimization, so helping companies get higher ranks on Google. But we tried to do that different. So we basically charge for the amount of clicks we delivered to the companies we worked with, which was very unusual.
Around what time was this?
This was like 2007. So I was basically 21 years old back then. And I was running that company, and we worked with a lot of big corporations and had this performance-based business model, which I thought was just brilliant, because we only charge if we delivered performance, and that is how all the businesses should work. And we worked really hard. We delivered great results, but also meant that the companies had to pay us a lot of money. And I went to that meeting with a proud, like, presentation with all the performance we have made, and every single customer told me, we need to terminate. It's too expensive. And I told them, like, no, it's not too expensive. What you're basically saying is that we have delivered two good results to you. And then they told me, but yeah, but you cost me 20,000 euros per month, and I can buy this for 500 euros per year. Yeah? And they said, yes, you can do that. But if you pay 500 euros per year, you'll get nothing. And now you get a lot for 22,000 euros per month. What do you choose? And the middle managers told me, I choose 500 euros per year to get nothing. And that was very depressing. But that is basically how most middle managers in the world operate. They're more scared of losing the job than they are interested in getting a new or better job. And what you do then is that you never take risk. You just want to do what everyone else have done previously, because then you will never lose your job. So back then I said, okay, I will never, never work in the consultancy business again, because this really, really sucks. I want to create a company where we run our own product, where we are not dependent on scared middle managers. And we started to look into different areas to work on. So it wasn't like, we want to do football directly. We looked into hotels, home electronics and stuff like that. And then I started to look in, then I started to look into football, and I realized like the football industry is really interesting for a lot of reasons. The most interesting reason is because it's the world's largest sport. 3 billion football fans in the world, bigger than any religion in the world. Okay, that's interesting. The second interesting part was that there were no global leader in football. At that time, the biggest football site had like 1.5 million users per day out of 3 billion football fans. So very fragmented, no global leader in it. And most football products looked more or less the same and was quite boring. So I said, okay, let's try to build a football product. So that is how we came into football.
And when you say we, who were part of that initial group?
So we were four people who worked in that consultancy company. So we financed it by doing consultancy on the side, basically. So it was me, it was a designer, a back-end developer, and a front-end developer who started it from the beginning. And so we started building a football website. So the idea was... So the football industry was very fragmented. So there was thousands of football sites that wrote about football. So our idea was to create one platform where you gather all the news in one place, which is a good idea. Like everyone thought it was a good idea. But the problem with good ideas is that it's really easy to come up with good ideas. Like I want to build a search engine that is better than Google. Great idea. Very hard to execute. I want to build a football platform which gather all the news articles in one place. Great idea. Very hard to execute. So we spent 1.5 years trying to build that website, and we failed. We failed because it's very, very hard to execute. And then we spent another year building that website again, failing. So basically 2.5 years of failing, very depressing. Spent a lot of time, no one used the products we built. And then we were very, very lucky because the iPhone came around, and we had another guy sitting in the same office, and he built an app called Sleep Cycle. It had like 10 million users. He was working on it alone. We were four people. We were depressed. He were happy. So we were like, okay, let's just do what he does. Let's make an iPhone app. And that was 2012. And then we did something that I think was very important. I don't think we realized it back then, but it was partly learning from our mistakes. So instead of building a product no one has ever built before, we looked at, okay, which is the most popular product in the space? Okay, it's a live score application. Okay, how can we improve that product? Okay, they don't have notifications, they don't have personalization, they don't have lineups and videos. Okay, let's do that. So we built that for 5 months. We released it in February 2012, and the first month we got 300,000 users. So instead of building a new product, we improved an existing. The problem with most companies today is that they are trying to build products that doesn't exist, which is really, really hard. And there is so many crappy products out there that you can improve. And more people should do that because it's so much easier to improve existing products than building new products.
How did you get that word out in the beginning to get 300,000 people to start using it?
So it was basically word of mouth. So I sent some, so we have like lately tried to do some user acquisition, but for the last 4 years, we didn't do any user acquisition at all. So I sent out some press releases to some app sites. Back then, there were sites writing about apps, which is how different the world was like back then. That gave us like initial like 27,000 users in the first day. And basically, after that day, it was all word of mouth. So we got 300,000 users and grew to 3 million basically based on word of mouth, because we delivered a product that was superior to our competitors, basically. So we actually got more users the first month than Facebook and Snapchat. And there's no network effect in the product. So that's pretty good, but we were very, very lucky. The problem that back then was that we thought it was because we were so smart. Very common mistake. You make something that is great. Your analysis is, we are so great, we are so smart. When we built that website that failed, our analysis was never, we are idiots. It was like, okay, we did that wrong, the timing was wrong, this was wrong. But when you do something great, it's very, very common that your analysis is because we are smart, and then you get too high on yourself, and then you make really, really bad decisions because you believe that you are smart, but you were just lucky. We were super lucky, and the reason why we were lucky was that the timing when we released our iPhone app was perfect. 2012, February. Everyone, early adopters looking for great apps, downloaded our app, spread it to their friends. that was the reason why we got so many users, not because we were smart, we were just lucky. But it took me 3 years to realize that. And during that 3 years, we did a lot of mistakes. But yeah, now I know it.
When you start this kind of a company and you have a few partners who are there in the early days, how do you go about structuring that?
So in that case, it was kind of different since we had this consultancy company. So we were more than four people in the consultancy company. So we said, okay, since you're part of the consultancy company, you will also be part of this company. So everyone that was part of the consultancy company became shareholders in Forza Football. And so we had like 14 shareholders from the beginning, which didn't work with the product. There were only four people who worked for the product. So kind of strange structure for a company. The purest way would, of course, be we are four, okay, 25% each, basically. So this was not that clean structure, but it gave us the opportunity to fail for 2.5 years since we can work with the consultancy on the side, which was good as well. So they were very valuable, all the people in that company anyway. And we started working with it. We failed for 2.5 years, and then we finally released a product that worked, and we started making money very fast. For me, making money is very, very important as a company. Most companies in my space don't think it's that important because they take the VC route, which we haven't done. And so from day one, we have been profitable. And I think that is very important because if you are profitable, you have freedom. And freedom is fun. And that improves your well-being.
What does the ownership structure look like today?
So today... I have a holding company which owns 53% of the votes. And in that holding company, I own 63% of the votes. So basically, I have 63% of the votes in the company. And then I tell my team members that you have the decision power. You do whatever you think is great for this company because I trust you guys. That is why I hired you. So that is how it looks like. I elect the board myself. So if the board isn't nice, I just change the board. And that creates freedom. And that is what I've fought for, to run a company where we have the freedom to do whatever we want. The people who work in the company, no outsider can come and say, we came up with this idea. We think you should do that. Because I think that is a very, very bad way of running a company. But most companies are running that way. There's very few companies where the employees have the power of the strategy, the long-term strategy. But that is how it works here.
And employees do have some ownership in the business as well.
Yeah, exactly. So 10% of the shares is owned by the employees. And in that employee company, as we call it, all the employees earn the same amount of the shares. So that is also, I think, something that is really important when you run companies. That like many companies have like shares for employees, but they say, we only give it to the important people. Then my second question is, why do you have people in your company that isn't important? They shouldn't work for you. That's a very strange way of looking at your business. So we consider everyone here important and equally important, no matter what you work with. And that is why everyone have the same amount of shares in that company. If I own 100% of the company myself, I probably gave them 90% instead of 10%. Unfortunately, I don't do that. But I think it's important to give them shares to make them feel that they're part of the company as well. That is a very unique way of doing it. And the other way we think about it is that, so after 12 months, we ask you if you have passion for the company and what you do in the company. And if you have that, you will become a shareholder. If not, you will not become a shareholder. But that also means that you should stop working here, because everyone who works here should have passion for what they do. And that is something I talk about very, very often.
How do they cash in on that? Because one thing that you talk about a lot is that you want to build the best company in the world. You want to build it for the next 100 years, which tells me that you're not really considering in selling the company and cashing in that sense. So
correct.
How do people get paid for their shares eventually?
So that is by building a profitable company. So if the company makes money, we will pay dividends, and that will make the employees get money. So that is what I want to build, a profitable company in the long term. So if I would get $10 billion, I wouldn't sell a company. No one believes me, but I wouldn't do it because this company is super important for me. It's so much fun working here. I love working here, and selling that company to get $10 billion, how would that improve my happiness? Most of the times, money make people depressed. Especially a lot of money. I've seen it a lot of times. And I think that is wrong with the society, that too many people believe that money is the root to happiness, which is not.
And on that note, you mentioned about not taking venture capital money. I can imagine you've had a lot of venture firms interested in investing in this. Tell me about that, and how have you gone about not taking anything in?
So basically, our company mission is to democratize football. And when we mean democratize football, that means that we want to move the power from FIFA or the big organizations back to the fans. We want the fans to vote on where to play the World Cup. And we want to FIFA to be more responsible and less corrupt. And that is a big statement, a big mission. Trying to democratize the world's biggest sport. That will take time. It will not take 5 years, 3 years, not even 10 years. It will take a lot of time to do it. And VC companies, their goal is not to democratize football. Their goal is to earn as much possible money on all the investments they make and sell those shares within 10 years. So if we would take VC money, their goals wouldn't align with us. And that's the simple reason why I don't take VC money, because their goal would never align with us. And if you have misaligned goals, it will not work out in the long term. And also, if you take money, it will take away freedom, because you're dependent on someone else's money. And I really, really, really value freedom.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
You've been very vocal about this, but I can imagine that there's still VC companies knocking on your door. They know what your stand is in this. What do they typically tell you?
No, they just call or send an email or whatever and say, I'm in Gothenburg, do you want to meet, or do you want to come and meet me, and like investment bankers and stuff like that. And I usually meet them. And the reason for that, because some of the people are quite smart, have some good feedback, so it's basically free consultancy. You tell them about your idea and your plans, and they give you some advice and stuff like that. And sometimes it's good advice. So I usually meet them for them that reason. And we actually have one VC company that is shareholder in our company, but they haven't went in with us. They haven't gave us a single dollar. So they bought secondary shares from people who didn't work in the company, who was part of that consultancy company. From my end, that makes sense. Because then the question is, like, will this company be a more valuable shareholder than those people who worked in a consultancy company? Yeah, I believe so. Okay, then they can buy some secondary shares. And because they will try to help us and have good contacts and stuff like that. So we have one VC company as a shareholder. Creandum was also one of the first investors in Spotify. But they haven't went in as in the traditional model, which is give money, give capital to the company, to grow the company. They have just bought secondary shares. I think it was the first time they ever did that, since it's not their business model, but they really wanted to get in. So yeah, we let them in.
Let's talk a little bit about the business. What does the business model look like?
Yeah, so we deliver a live score experience to our users, where you can follow your favorite teams and get push notifications really, really fast in a great designed product. And then our revenue is 100% advertising based. So we go to Nike, tell them, okay, we have 3 million users. This amount of users are in your target group, and we have a great way of promoting your boots. And then we get money from them, and we pay the salaries to improve the product.
Do you envision that model evolving, or do you look at any alternative revenue sources?
I think it's a great model for Forza Football, because we want to get 300 million users, and we can't like have a, we can't let them pay in order to use it, something like that, to get 300 million users. But we also have, we have a secondary, a second product as well, and that product is basically, we want to help football clubs to get closer to their fans. It's basically an app where clubs can live stream and communicate directly with their fans. It's a really interesting way, because I think football clubs haven't solved the way they communicate or monetize on their fans digitally. And I think we have the opportunity to solve it for them. And I think it's very hard for football clubs to solve it themselves.
Why?
There's one very good reason for that, because they're a football club. They're not app developers. They are app developers and they are a football club. So I go to the football clubs and tell them, we can help you solve this problem. We have an idea on how to solve it. And some clubs say, ah, we will solve it ourselves. And I think that's very strange. That would be like Bayern Munich coming to me and saying, we have a football academy in Cambodia where we have a, where we give kids an opportunity to train football, like run it as a CSR project. So that would be like a Bayern Munich head of academy coming to me, I can help you educate your academy in Cambodia. And I would say, I will do it myself. Which would be considered a very, very strange thing of saying. But that is how most football clubs react. They, like, football clubs aren't app developers. They should take help from others to build platforms. And I think building football platforms, I think we have a pretty good track record in that. So I'm trying to convince the club what they should focus on and what they shouldn't focus on. And that is hard. So I've employed someone else to do it, because I just get angry with them, because I think they're, I just get, when they say things like that, I'm very open to them, what I think about the way they think. And then we just, that's not good for long term. So I've employed someone that do it 10 times better than me, that had a lot of more, what's tålamod?
Patience.
Yeah, I have a lot of more patience. Patience isn't my, is a big weakness as well.
Tell me a little bit more about how that app works. So is it a white label solution, basically, that you sell it into the club?
Yeah. So it's a white, it's an app. It's a white label solution. So it's an app where the clubs can create live videos, video on demands, and where the fans can interact and chat with the club when they create it in a closed platform. And the idea is also that some contributors, so some fans that are very prominent and great, will also be able to create content in the same platform. So, for example, it could be, we have done some really cool things, like a live chat with sports director of IFK Gothenburg. 1 hour's live chat where the fans can interact and ask questions directly to the sports director about the transfers and stuff like that. Great content, great way to take fans closer to the club. And it's all about fans, like in a closed platform. So the way the clubs will monetize is also that some content will be premium content. So you need a membership in order to get that content. It could be like live streamed youth matches, for example. So yeah, that is the way it works. I showed it for you briefly, but I think it looks amazing. And I think it's a really, really important problem to solve, because the way clubs work today, spending a lot of time uploading great content to Facebook, just give it away for free and Facebook monetize on it, that is not a good business idea. Basically, the amount of money clubs monetize digitally is ridiculously low. It's more or less nothing. It's like we earn more money digitally than most football clubs in the world. So I tell them, we are pretty good at this. Let's try to do this together. Because what's the reason for having 80 million Facebook fans? How do you monetize? Like nothing. You just post things there and you get 200,000 likes. But what is 200,000 likes worth? And they give all the data to the big platforms instead of getting the data themselves. I heard the interview we had with a guy from Arsenal, and he talked about that problem. And I think it's very, very common. But most of the time, the clubs try to build their own platforms, which doesn't make sense, because they aren't digital product developers. They are football clubs.
What's your biggest challenge? What's that one thing that keeps you up at night?
Right now, we want to improve the data we deliver to our users. And we want to do that by crowdsourcing data. We want to cover all the football matches in the world. And that is will be a hard challenge and something we haven't done before. But we are testing it and it looks pretty good. And that is by far our biggest challenge. How do we go from covering 500 leagues or 90 leagues to 50,000? The other big challenge is for Force FC. How do we really, really create an app that gets fans closer to the club and make the superior club platform? So our product missions are my biggest challenges.
How many leagues do you cover right now?
So with proper live score, like with great coverage, we cover 96 leagues. So that's our competitors. We cover exactly the same amount of leagues. So that is why we want to cover 50,000 leagues.
How do you do that?
By crowdsourcing. So we ask our users, do you want to help us report this lineup? And please do it and you will get some recognition if you do it. So we want to crowdsource our way from 96 to 50,000, because then we will cover 1,000 more leagues than our competitors and probably be 10 times better. So basically, if you have an 8-year-old daughter playing in the US, we want you to be able to follow her in our application and get a highlight when she scores a goal.
What new areas excite you the most?
Good question. I think what excites me the most is when people who are grown up with smartphones, when they will start developing apps. That will be really, really interesting, because if I look at the people who develop apps now, it's not people who have grown up with a smartphone. It's people like me. And I think the most interesting internet products came when people who grow up with internet started developing internet products or web-based products. So the people who grow up with smartphones, when they start to develop apps, then I think we will see some really cool stuff. I think the apps we're using today is just not that cool. It's just extensions of websites in another format. Some apps are pretty cool, like Uber, like that use all the benefits of a smartphone. But most apps doesn't use all the benefits of a smartphone. And I think there's a lot of cool things to be developed. Like the second coolest thing is a freaking Pokemon game. Like, that is how bad we are at developing cool smartphone products. So I think there will become some really cool products when those people who are brought up with a smartphone will start thinking about great products that can be developed.
We're getting towards the end here. We've covered quite a bit. Is there any area you feel like we haven't really talked about that's really important to you?
I would say how broken football is. that is, you know, the mission we have, basically. We have a FIFA where like 14 people are in a trial for corruption, where they have scammed the board of football of like hundreds of millions of dollars. And we have a FIFA that is highly, highly broken and that needs to be solved. And that is what we are working on. And we also have huge problems with LGBT rights in football. We don't have any gay men football player playing in any of the 5 top leagues, and I have never had an active football player that is gay, which is a huge problem, which we highlighted recently with our big research we did with Stonewall. And FIFA or UEFA have never talked about this issue, and which means that instead they are having the World Cup in Russia, which is a homophobic country, which also our research showed. We have another World Cup in Qatar with a population of 200,000 people. 4,000 people will probably die just because of building the arenas and arranging that World Cup. It will have a big, big footprint on the environment to arrange the World Cup there. It will be too hot to arrange the World Cup there. But for some reason, 14 people in the executive board decided to vote for hosting the World Cup in Qatar. And I think I know why. And I don't think it was because it was best for the football fans.
So how do you envision it? How do you go about changing that?
Yeah, so basically, first of all, we display the problem by conduct these big researches we're doing with Stonewall and Amnesty. We could show that 86% of the fans wanted FIFA to consider human rights when awarding the World Cup, which they don't do today. So we highlight what the fans really, really want. But in the end of the day, we need to build a product that is 10 times better than our competitors, that will then give us 300 million users. And we can then democratize football. And we envision it to be in 2024, we want the fans vote for where to play the World Cup. not a boardroom in FIFA. We want, in 2024, we want transgender football players. In 2024, we want it to make it be impossible to host any World Cup if you are breaking human rights laws. And we also, if a country is hosting a World Cup, the population needs to want to host the World Cup, not what we saw in Brazil, where it was very clear that the football fans didn't even want to have the World Cup because it was so much problems. And they built like a $200 million arena in the middle of the forest just for playing four games. It's just depressing, and there's a lot of things to solve in this broken football industry. And same with the clubs, basically, you know, nations owning clubs, nation buying players, you know, that is not how football was supposed to work out. So yeah, financial fair play is broken. A lot of things is broken. I think that is very important for football to solve.
And the basic function of that is really the power of the masses, getting your user base up to hopefully the 300 million, and then you can do a vote among all of those
things. Yeah, I know that the fans will make better decisions than FIFA. I know it. We did a poll about where to host the World Cup 2022. Qatar got 1% of the votes. Still, we're playing it in Qatar. Why? The fans who owns football doesn't want to have it in Qatar. Still, we play it there. Doesn't make any sense.
Who was number one on that list?
Australia.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah, that would have been really cool. And they have a lot of arenas. They don't have to build 50 arenas as well.
Yeah, they have an infrastructure that works already and all of the above. I'm just going to hold you for a few more minutes. We're going to do a set of rapid fire questions and we'll wrap this up.
Yeah.
All right. The biggest moment in your career?
I would say the day after we released our app Forza Football, and I realized we had 27,000 downloads the day before.
The deal you've been involved with that you're most proud of?
I think probably when we got Nike as an advertiser 1 month after we released the app.
The most important characteristic to be successful in your position?
To be humble and to realize and learn from your failures.
And this one goes kind of hand in hand with that. What's a recommendation to somebody who wants to follow in your footsteps?
I can say find a product that sucks and improve that product and make sure that you're really passionate about improving that product.
A business leader that you look up to and you think people should follow?
I think the founder of Patagonia is really cool. They have a really, really clear mission and a really good cause in the business they're doing.
And his name is Yvon Chouinard.
Yeah, and there's a book called Let People Go Surfing.
A book recommendation. Would it be that one?
Yeah, I would say Let People Go Surfing or Shoe Dog about Nike is really good as well.
A film recommendation?
Of course, Zero Dreams of Sushi.
You get to take three people for dinner related to the football world, past or present, and let's assume language is not a barrier. Who are those three?
I would say Infantino, the FIFA president, I would bring. I would also say Kim Jong-un, probably as well, and Donald Trump.
Although the last two aren't really football related.
It has to be football related.
Yes.
Okay.
Then those three are pretty good, though.
Yeah. It would be a very interesting dinner. I would try to convince them to improve the world. Okay, football individuals, and I would say Infantino, and I would say Alex Ferguson, and I would say Leo Messi.
How can people follow you?
Downloading the app Forza Football or Instagram Patrick Arneson. I forgot my password to Twitter, so I don't have a Twitter account, and it's impossible to revoke it.
Do you have anything you would like to recommend?
Solve all the broken products in the world and go to Japan.
Last question. Who do you think I should interview on this podcast?
Infantino, the FIFA president.
That's a good one. He's on my list.
Yeah, good.
All right, Patrick, thank you so much. Thanks for taking the time here on a cool, brisk Gothenburg morning. I very much appreciate it. I'm excited to see where we'll see you and the company over the next 100 years. I'm sure there are going to be a lot of new interesting developments coming along, and also curious to see more awareness globally about the product, about the company. I think there's a lot of great learnings here, not only for people within Sweden or Europe, but really all over the world. So very much appreciate it, and best of luck.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please subscribe on iTunes and write a review. I would really appreciate it as we grow this podcast one listener at a time. If you have any feedback or ideas, feel free to send me an email at sebastian@coffeeandfootball.com. Stay tuned for next episode. It will be another amazing one. Thanks again and have a great week.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.